This is the Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency, with information for business and IT professionals. To support this podcast, visit donation.ciaops.com. This is episode 45 with Suzanne Dancy. Welcome along to a Need to Know podcast, the first one for the year 2013. I'm joined by a repeat interviewee, Suzanne Dancy. Welcome, Suzanne.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Well, what I decided to ask Suzanne on to talk about is some of our favourite business books, which we thought would be of benefit to the people out there, given it's still a bit of a holiday season and people's news resolutions are hot off the presses. These are probably books that both of us would certainly find have influenced us, or definitely would recommend to others to spend some time, sit down and basically go through. So, but before we get into that, what I'll do is I'll just get Suzanne to introduce herself and let everybody know what she does.
My name is Suzanne Dancy, and I am the owner of a company called Purple Cow Ideas Management, and the business has now been running for 3 years. And that started when I'd left Australia and come back, and I wanted to use my experience in my career to be able to help businesses in the IT industry. And the particular aspect and focus that I really play in is the sales life cycle, and how to get people engaged with customers a lot better than they are already. So that's really the main aim. It's a sales focus, but a lot of marketing, customer relationships, a bit of technical falls into that. So I'm able to use all of my experience, wrap it up, and deliver it to my clients. And those clients are people who I have it's more of a vertical focus in the industry. So you've got the vendors at the top, the logistics in the middle, you've got resellers at the bottom if you look at how sort of like kit flows, but also people like channel associations as well. So I make sure that I have a reach into each of those different areas so that I have a broader understanding that I can then lend to each of my clients.
And obviously we can tell by your strange accent and the strange reason why you left Australia that you're not based out here. So is your focus just the UK, or do you span any other areas?
I span worldwide, and that really comes from a network that I've picked up over probably about 10 years now. But it's a lot easier to work with people in the UK, just mainly because face-to-face is pretty effective. But that doesn't mean I'm off limits to the likes of people in Australia. I think, and having given that I pop back every so often, because I have an Aussie husband now, because in the first instant I had an Aussie boyfriend, now I have an Aussie husband. It means that I've got roots firmly in both countries.
It also means that you can speak Australian as well, which makes it very
Australian.
Good. Yes, you can makes it very good for most of our audience, and probably for the fact that when our sporting prowess gets back up again, we'll be able to take full advantage of that.
You're more than welcome. At the moment, I'm taking full advantage of it.
Yeah, I go swings and roundabouts, as they say, swings and roundabouts.
Moving on.
Okay, so now that you've introduced yourself, what is your first choice for something that somebody should basically stick their nose in?
My first book actually stretches back to when I was at school. It's funny, when I went to school, I didn't really see the point of what I was learning until I got to about this age. And when I was in my English classes, we had to study a book called The Prince by Niccolo Machiavelli. And that really talks about how he, with his country, basically managed their power and how they overtook other countries. And for me, who's a bit of a softie, I found it quite hard book to get my head round to actually put myself in. But I realised that in a business world, in a business sense, sometimes you've got to make decisions that aren't necessarily fluffy and huggy. You've actually got to make it for the sort of like the greater good. And I think this book at the moment plays a lot on my mind in terms of some of the lessons it learns. And it's a really easy book to read. It's really small. And if we learnt it at school, it's a nice, easy book to read. And because it's not particularly business focused as such, it allows your brain to just switch gears slightly and just take a step back from what your head's normally in every day and learn some lessons from practical history. It's a good book.
So, I mean, is it, a general life book, or as you say, it's, it is a business one, or is it, how is it, is a lifestyle book sort of thing, or is it, directly applicable perhaps to business?
I would say that it's about life as well. I think in terms of relationships, in terms of what you want. But again, you've really got to read it and then interpret it to whatever it strikes a chord with within you. For me, the book resonates holistically to the way I approach life and business, and sometimes they merge quite easily. But from a business perspective, I think there's a lot of learning, because obviously you do bump into people you don't necessarily get on with and have to work with, whereas in your personal life, sometimes, you get the luxury of not having to do that at all. So, it's a very interesting book. And because it's true, it also helped put some of the makeup together and the patchwork together of what is now Europe. So they didn't have businesses particularly then in the way that we know them. So I would say that it's a personal book as well.
Interesting. All right. So the book that I think that has influenced me the most of late, and probably overall, is unfortunately it's got not a particularly good name, I believe. It's called The Fast Lane Millionaire, and it's by MJ DeMarco. Now, one of the important things with a lot of the books that I have been going through and have been finding good is that people mistake a lot of these sort of books and the authors and some of these people, which I will mention, as get rich quick style, that sort of style of book. And I think this book was interesting in that it highlights that there is a difference between get rich easy and get rich quick. What it illustrates is that the power of the internet these days, the leverage that is possible, selling products or doing, apps or things like that, give you the ability certainly to, get rich quick. It doesn't mean that you don't have to put the time, the effort, the hard work and all that sort of thing in there. But what we now see is possible for any sort of business generally is the fact that, with the right product in the right niche, with the medium that the internet does provide, you can certainly scale that up. Now, what I tend to see now with a lot of resellers who work in the SMB and the old SBS space is that they're spending a lot of time doing the same old thing. They're basically trading time for money. And there's only so much time that everybody's got that they can trade for money. And again, if you're happy doing that and you this is a sort of environment that you want to work in and be comfortable, and that's great. But I see a lot of people who perhaps believe, they seem to think that they'll start off as a one-man band in this sort of IT space and then scale up and then sell the business, or it'll be a $50 million business or whatever. And it seems to be more common than not that this is the thinking of a lot of these sort of one-man bands, two-man bands growing up. And I think the trend is very much against that now. It's all about scale in the IT world. And I think that as much negative as you could say about people who are perhaps doing break-fix or MSP-style businesses, they still do possess a significant amount of information that they could resell, package up, and sell to a much larger audience. So, for example, you've got, someone like Karl Palachek, who, again, has packaged up a lot of his knowledge and made products that he's now selling to a worldwide audience, and he's able to then roll out new products as new releases come out. So I think that, again, it's a book, unfortunately, that, again, perhaps a bad choice of title, but I do understand they need to obviously market it to people and get people to read it. I think it's a very practical book. I think you've got to look at it, and it strips away a lot of the BS around, growing a business. At the end of the day, there are hard decisions that need to be made. And again, part of that is that if you do make those, there is the opportunity of a medium like the internet to be able to leverage your product. And people like Suzanne are obviously doing that, selling to an international audience, consulting to an international audience, using things like Skype, delivering things digitally. There's a huge amount of opportunity in that. And I think that's one of the books that I've read that has been, very easy to read, very straightforward, very plain English. It's not going to be obviously for everybody's cup of tea, but you know, again, I think that there's nothing wrong with, you know, what the author's saying and how he goes about it. I think there's a lot of truth, and a lot of that could be taken away by any business person and say, look, you know, am I really going to achieve what I'm after doing the business that I've traditionally been doing for so long? So that's my initial choice. And I think that, again, a lot of these books, you know, it's worth reading, having a look. They may not be your cup of tea, but I think they're definitely worth a feel. So anyway, that's my first choice. What about number two, Suzanne?
My second book is The Exclusive about Steve Jobs. And whilst I don't like the guy, he actually teaches me, and it probably is a bit like what you say, Robert, where sometimes you don't want to necessarily have that opinion, but by reading that book, I think it opens up your mind a little bit more, which leads into another book that I've been reading as well. But the thing about Steve Jobs was that I think this guy represents what Machiavelli was talking about, you know, many years ago in the 18th century, and he's the modern day illustration. But what makes it even more compelling is that, you know, everybody has a piece of Apple somewhere. Everybody's been affected by it in some way. Especially from a, you know, coming from a Microsoft community as well. I've kind of watched it, and I'm talking to you using a Mac now, and I have an iPad sitting next to me. So, you know, I'm a bit of both. And that the guy basically has changed the way that we look at technology. But what I felt was more important, and when I listened to this as an audiobook, because I was lazy, what I realized about Steve was that he's not necessarily about theory, and he's more about being practical. And what I mean by that is that, I know we're doing a book review session, is that a lot of people spend a lot of time reading books and then don't go and implement. And this guy, as much as I don't like him, I don't know him actually, but as much as he made some really bad decisions in terms of other people's mindsets, he had a vision that he followed through. And he created things that were scalable. He commoditized a lot of products, but he also went against what everybody saw as acceptable in that space. He changed the status quo. And that, for me, is extremely important, particularly when at the moment I think we have a saturation of technology and choices around it, and small businesses are still trying to figure out where they fit. This guy didn't hang around, and he went large quickly. And even if you don't want that particularly, there's still lessons to be learned. And more importantly, you can learn from the stories of other people who are affected by him as well, who are still alive, very successful, but, you know, have huge admiration and respect for that guy, even if they didn't necessarily end up being the best of friends. So it's a very interesting book because it tests you, and it allows you to draw opinions and conclusions about yourself, and use the book as a mirror, really, just to check where you are in your business and what you want to do. And it's just a very inspirational book. Not in the Steve Jobs Club.
Yeah, I was just going to say that this is the Steve Jobs book by Walter Isaacson, I think. That's the one?
That's right. Yes, sorry, yes.
That's fine. He also wrote a very good book, biography on Benjamin Franklin, which, again, is another one worth reading. But I think that I agree with you that one of the conclusions that I'm sort of coming to at the moment is the fact that, you know, I mean, it's not the right term to say successful, but I mean, if you do want to succeed above the average, if you do want to excel, let's say, if you do want to excel, then you can't do what everybody else is doing, you know, because that's obviously, you know, that's the average. And this is, again, probably a good example of someone who, you know, with a passion and with a, like I said, you know, the vision and, you know, was set out to achieve this no matter what the odds, because, you know, he saw his vision. And I think that, you know, again, when you look at the products from the Apple IIe to the iPod to the iPhone to the iPad, I mean, he certainly had a lot of hits when you look at it compared to a lot of other businesses. So there obviously must be something in there.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so, Sorry,
I just think him as a leader, I think a lot of people who are looking for books to read have a role as a leader within their business. And so, you know, if ever you wanted a great example, Steve Jobs is one of those. So it's a nice person to sort of like pick and choose what you like about him and see if you can adopt that in the new year and help lend that to the business.
Well, it's certainly, again, he's one of the icons of the industry. I mean, I had an Apple IIe, you know, out of school or whatever, and, you know, found it fantastic, and then obviously went to the Microsoft technologies when Apple's went a bit, you know, wayward. But I will say that, you know, in today's market, more and more customers are choosing, you know, Macintoshes and wanting to go Apples. And again, it's one of those strange things as a technology person. You look at it and say, well, why are these people so passionate about a product which is that much more expensive and perhaps doesn't have all the features and functionality and the, you know, available to it? But yeah, it certainly endears that passion for the product, and that sort of is an indication that, you know, that's the way the market's going.
Yeah.
All right, so my second choice, again, is a similarly polarizing book I found with a lot of people. It's The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. I am a big Tim Ferriss fan. I obviously don't take everything that he has on board as gospel, but it is one of those books that I read, and it basically changed my complete mindset. I think that one of the issues that a lot of businesses, especially in the smaller space, face is that I believe that with the commoditization of IT and with what we're seeing with larger IT companies is that there are two ways to make money for a lot of businesses now. I think that you can make money in IT by basically getting big, by getting advantages of scale, by getting lots of customers. So if you're an MSP, that means lots more customers, that means lots more contracts, that means a lot more people paying paying money to you on a regular basis. The other way is the complete opposite, is basically scale it right down to an absolute minimum, whether that be, you know, basically a one-man band. I think that is where you specialize in your niche and you do what you need to do, and you know, you don't try and be a jack of all trades. I think, unfortunately, the gap in between the two, three, four, five-man business basically under so much pressure, because again, if you look at it from the factors, if you're a one-man band and you're a one-person band and you get too much work, then you want to bring on an employee. So if you do bring on an employee, that's a huge amount of additional work that you have to do. You may think it may actually be reducing your work, but in a lot of cases, you've now got to take on the HR role, you've now got to take on managing the employee. And again, what happens when the employee leaves? You've scaled up, you've doubled your work to start paying for this employee, and the employee goes, you know what, this job isn't challenging me enough, I'm going to leave. So all of a sudden, you're back to being a one-person band with double the amount of work, and basically then trying again to find somebody else to replace it. So even things like the tools, the Kaseyas, all those sort of tools cost money. There's a big investment up front. And again, that can be spread over many customers with a larger firm. But I think those businesses in the middle, the 2 to 3, 5, are really going to have a lot of questions, or, you know, big questions to answer, because they're the ones that are constantly under pressure, because, you know, you get people like Microsoft and Google coming in with their cloud applications and basically saying, look, you know, we can do just about all of what these people are providing you for a lot cheaper. You know, it's not perfect, we admit, but, you know, to a customer's eyes, especially in that small end, costs are a major issue. So the thing about this book was it basically looked at it and said, you know, you can outsource a lot of it. You know, are you actually being as effective with your time as possible? Do you really need to spend this amount of time working so hard? And, you know, think about your business and, you know, use the internet, use the technologies that are out there to leverage it. So I think it's not a case of trying to work back to only working 4 hours. I think it's a case of looking at it sort of saying, you know, can I outsource this? So, for example, you know, do I really need to have a full-time receptionist or secretary? What about if I get a virtual assistant? How can I use internet mailing? How can I use, Evernote? These sort of tools are available to make me appear much bigger. And, again, the internet provides that facility. So, again, I think it's one of the books that you look at and say, you know what? What do I really want out of life? What am I doing? What am I'm doing this business for? What am I actually going to do with the money or the benefit that I get out of this? You know, what do I actually want out of life? And I think that you see a lot of people, especially in the space that we're in, basically, you know, turn around if they have an issue or a health issue or a challenge or something, say, you know what, I spent all this time trying to get a business up and running, and now you know, I haven't got as much money, or my health's bad. So I think, again, it's one of those books that make you stop and think and say, you know, what am I really trying to get out of life? So, I mean, would you agree that the middle, those, you know, 3 to 5 man bands are the ones that are going to be under the most pressure going forward, Suzanne?
Definitely. I think if you haven't worked out what the point of your business is and you have that many people, you're destined to fail. And you've brought up the word scalable quite a lot, actually, and that's a really key point as a driver for businesses. And I think if I can be cheeky enough to lead on to my next book, just to illustrate that point, there's a book called Willful Blindness by Margaret Heffernan, and it talks a lot about how we choose to ignore the obvious. And a lot of the times, those 3 to 5 man businesses sometimes don't realise what the rest of the world, particularly their competitors, are up to. They get a little bit obsessed too much with the technology rather than their customers. And in doing so, you know, they just set themselves on a slow burn to the end, especially if all the IP is stored up in the boss's head and the rest of the guys are just turning up just for a salary. So, yes, I completely agree with that.
I think that it's, again, I would say that you're right. You know, I agree with you. The fact that things are changing so rapidly and the landscape's changing so markedly. So we've had, obviously, the discontinuation of SBS. We've had the introduction of Office 365, and Google's obviously pushing its product, the more cloud-based apps, the Apple and the iStore model. It's not going to go back to the way it was. I mean, people say, no, a couple more months and it'll go back to the way it was. I just think that, again, it's one of these inflection points where it changes, and it changes for good, really.
Yeah, I agree. I think unless small businesses put emphasis on people rather than technology, I don't see them around in the next 5 years.
And I think that, you know, one of the points is, and that I've been, you know, when people have talked to me recently, is about the relationship side of it. I think that what I neglected, or what I didn't, you know, put emphasis on for such a long time, was the fact of building, you know, relationships and those sort of things. I was very much the typical technician who said, you know, I know everything, I can do it all, you know, I'm better than everybody else. And again, you know, as the power of the internet and the search engines come online, you soon realize that, you know, people are blogging about all this stuff that you might know anyway, and it's just a matter of people finding it and being able to implement it. So again, the power of it is people buy from people when it comes down to it.
Yeah, and it's just getting out from behind the monitor and, you know, interacting with them. It's the customers that are going to drive your business. Not, you know, you can't just come up with a load of ideas that are going to have no traction in the real world. So yes, it doesn't matter what you sell, whether it's tractor tires or various versions of cloud-hosted services, you know, it's whether the customer needs it and what's best for the success of the business for them.
So, again, so I'll lead into my third choice is a book called The Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell. This is, for me, was a book that I got probably 2 Christmases ago. And basically, as soon as I picked it up, I read it from cover to cover without stopping. It's one of those books that, again, you know, challenges the way that you think. What it basically talks about is the fact that there are obviously points where, you know, things go viral, and why do things go viral? But the most important thing I took away from that book was that it talks about how there are key people within your network who can give you additional leverage to achieve what you want. So, for example, one of the examples that he uses was that during the American Revolution, Paul Revere basically rode north and warned the Americans that the British were coming, and they were able to mobilize and deal with that threat. Apparently, there was a similar person, not as well connected as Paul Revere, who actually rode south and tried to achieve the same thing. But because he didn't have that influence, because he hadn't built up that network, because he hadn't been the center of his community, he just didn't get any support, you know, and basically he was left there all by himself. So it's a very interesting book that, again, it talks about the idea that there are certain personalities and there are certain things that you are good at, and to be a, you know, have a complete opportunity, I suppose, you need to make sure that you have these sort of key people, so that if you are a very good technician, you need to obviously link up with someone who might be a very good salesman, or someone who's able to, you know, be a very good organizer. I think that what the book said is it's rare to actually find an individual who's all three. And again, part of it should be this, we talked about this relationship, this search to fill in the points which you are probably weakest at is probably going to be done by finding someone else who probably has those gifts more naturally. So I think it's that, plus the fact is, you know, if you are a technical person, you tend to keep focusing technically on what you do, and perhaps really you need to balance up that and again work on the relationships, get out there and do a bit of networking, get away from behind the screen, as you talk about. And again, you know, it's moving again, you know, we're seeing this social network and all this stuff. It's all about the relationships, and that seems to be what's driving business, especially obviously in the economic terms, when we're faced with, you know, customers who are, you know, looking at every dollar very, very closely. You know, having that relationship is probably what's going to get you across the line, I would think.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so next.
So my first three books are sort of like the big ideas, sort of like more of the strategic thinking. So I just wanted to sort of like bring it down a little bit and go a bit more tactical. And one of the most interesting books that I've read, and it's one of the easiest ones I've ever read, is a book entitled What Everybody Is Saying, An Ex-FBI Agent's Guide to Speed Reading People.
Yeah, and I've read this that. Great
is
book.
By Joe Navarro. And a nice guy, actually. You can happily have a Twitter conversation with him as well. He's really nice. And this book is a very easy way, because it has pictures, which helps me a lot, to just look at people in a different way. Again, a little bit like willful blindness. We can act on what we hear, but sometimes I think what the body is saying, you know, those natural reactions sometimes say a lot different. And he basically goes through things, you know, differences between men and women when they feel threatened, even though they say they're fine with a conversation. But certainly for me, the reason why I got the book was because I think it assists greatly in the sales process, because especially when you meet people, what they say and how they act could be the difference between whether you get the sale or don't, and also how much of the sale you can get as well. We have a phrase called leaving something on the table, and basically that means that, you know, if you walk away and you've left something on the table, you haven't really asked them for as much as they possibly could give you. So this book is a really handy way at opening your eyes to interpreting language and what is actually being communicated non-verbally. It's very good.
I think also too that, you know, as they say, you know, 85% or something of human communications is all, you know, is basically, you know, non-verbal or whatever, you know, the look, the, you know, the attitude and all that sort of stuff. So again, I think that unfortunately, like, you tend to see, you know, if you want to categorize, there's a lot of, you know, technical people very focused on the technical, the speeds and the feeds and the answers, and really the customer may not be asking for that at all. And that's, you know, that's where obviously a book like this would help greatly.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I'm good. I'm glad you read it too.
Yeah, it was one of, again, it's one of those books that comes across your radar and you're sort of, oh, that's very interesting. And again, you know, if you look at the reviews and what people do say about it, they certainly give it you know, very high marks. And obviously someone who's come from a law enforcement background, that's what they, you know, that's obviously what they do. And it's amazing once you start breaking these sort of things down, how you can, you know, how they can be utilized to actually give you a heads up. And there's nothing wrong with that, I don't think. It's just a matter of you being smart about the information.
That's right. Well, you save people millions. So if we can save a few hundreds or maybe thousands, then all the better for us.
And I think, again, you know, part of it is that I think that, you know, in this day and age, it's a matter of, you know, working smarter and, you know, the 4-hour work week and those sort of things. I think part of it is going back to question those things that you do regularly and sort of saying, well, if you've got a prospect or someone and you're trying to pitch to them and you know, you're getting the crossed arms and you're getting the frown and you're getting all the obvious symbols that you may be ignoring. I mean, perhaps it's a good, you know, it's a good signal that either to walk away or put it off for another day. I think that sometimes those sort of subtle symbols can be overlooked, and that can again count against you, because like I said, you know, the trend is that, you know, people want to deal with people they like, and that, you know, the silliest things in some cases can, you know, turn people against you.
Exactly.
All right, so again, my next choice is a book called Book Yourself Solid. Again, read that very recently, and I think that, you know, there are a lot of books out there covering these sort of topics. This one here is by Michael Port. It's a way to sit down and address and sort of say, you want people obviously to be coming to you. You want to set yourself up as being enticing so that customers, you know, are basically coming to you, and making sure that you know, you've got all your ducks in line. So part of that is obviously building a good network around you. Basically, you know, the email feeder, the marketing, the social networking, all those sort of mechanisms, the website, the SEO, all of those add up to a contributing factor. And I think that, you know, it's interesting. One of the things I see is that so many people, when they do employ you, or you do meet them, the first thing they do is obviously they go then and check out your website, and then secondly they probably go and check you out on a service like LinkedIn. It's amazing to me to find how many IT resellers who, you know, are struggling for business or looking to expand or whatever, aren't using something like LinkedIn, and also would probably question you know, the website and how effective it is. I think that in this day and age, it's so relatively easy and relatively cheap to get a, you know, a decent looking website, or a, you know, up to date looking website. But some of the ones I have seen from people, you know, back in the 1980s with, you know, animated GIFs and things like that, I think again that says a lot about you. And it may seem trivial, but I mean, all these sort of things add up, because again, people are generally going to do their research on the internet before they make a choice for you. I mean, is that a fair comment, Suzanne?
Definitely. I think LinkedIn's used a lot more over here. But then again, in the same breath, whilst they use it, it doesn't mean necessarily they're making the most of what they use. So yeah, we may be a little bit more taking it up over here, but it doesn't mean it's any more effective.
Well, I think, again, it's like, you know, it's like any resource. I mean, you know, LinkedIn's a great resource. And, you know, I hear a lot of resellers saying, well, you know, I'm not on Facebook. Facebook's evil. And it's, you know, I don't want my information to go on Facebook. And they say, okay, well, that's fine. I mean, you know, there are a billion users on Facebook. So just for a pure numbers play, it's worthwhile putting something up. And again, you own the information that's up there is only what you put up there. So again, you can now obviously separate a personal and a business account, which is obviously my general recommendation. Just keep them separate. But the good thing about LinkedIn, obviously, that it's totally focused on the business aspect. And again, it's allows you to put so much information in there about yourself, your qualifications. And again, I think the most important thing I found with LinkedIn is the testimonials, is the ability to ask people to give you just a 2 or 3 line reference or backup on what you do. And I think that has a huge effect on people, especially if you can start building that up and soliciting that and getting that from your clients. And again, it's a good way to be able to present that to people on an ongoing basis. And I think, unfortunately, again, it's something that's not as leveraged as it should. It doesn't take a lot of effort to build up a decent profile. But again, you know, so many profiles I see of you know, resellers or whatever, there's no photo, there's, you know, very little scanned information, there's no connections. I don't know. Is that something that you'd be recommending that they should be spending time on?
Definitely. I mean, if you put yourself up there and you put yourself out there and you're not giving people the information in the same breath of time that it takes them to find you, they'll just switch off. They'll go find somebody else. And again, you know, I think all of that has to, when you were talking about scalability earlier, I think one of the things that I try and emphasize to clients and to businesses in general, especially around marketing, is that, you know, develop what we know as a boilerplate, which is just standard terms, because just a standard description of what your business is, because once it's on your website, once it's on LinkedIn, your staff can then cut and paste it as well. So everything's uniform. And it doesn't take too long. And that's the bit that I don't understand, is that when they are scanned, as you say, I don't understand why they thought they put all the effort into signing up, creating the account. They probably sit there looking at everybody else lurking. Yet, you know, the information that they look for, they're not providing for others.
I think also, too, the other thing that a lot of people overlook with LinkedIn is the fact that it's got, you know, interest groups. So what you can do is, if, you know, you're interested in cloud technology, you can sign up to a cloud group, and then there are discussions that are conducted in there. So again, if you're looking to expand your business, or, you know, you see yourself as a subject matter expert, you can definitely jump in there and start making contributions. And on the other side, if you perhaps lack a bit of marketing skill, you can jump in on the marketing side of the group and basically sit in there and ask questions. So again, I think that there's a lot of power in this sort of product. It goes beyond just a business Facebook. I think that this day and age, there is such a need for a living CV, you know, where it's always updated, has the most relevant information. And, you know, if you look at what recruitment firms and you look at what the bigger businesses are doing, they're not putting ads in papers. They're not doing the traditional way, as we spoke about before. They're using things like LinkedIn to trawl for people, to find new employees, to find strategic partners. And again, if your profile isn't, you know, up to a level that it should be, then, you know, they're just going to walk past you. So again, I think this is one of these critical tools that needs to be used on a regular basis and brought up to a level. And if you know, again, speak to others or get some help on it, because I just think it's so critical moving forward.
Yep.
Okay, another choice?
Yes, well, it's not exactly a book. It's a subscription to the Harvard Business Review, because that magazine continues to blow my mind. And because it's in a magazine format, you get regular injections of very comprehensive ideas. Many of them around sales. Many of them are around stories that use examples from outside of our industry, which I think is extremely compelling. It's a brilliant read. I mean, the information you could probably find if you looked hard enough all over the internet. But because it's in one spot, because of the quality of the content, that for me is actually where I spend more time reading rather than just in one book. Because not only do I get the journalist or the author's commentary and their thoughts and empirical evidence, you also get a lot of commentary and feedback from other readers, which I think continues the conversation. So that for me, or that whilst it's not a book, would be probably one of the most important investments I've made.
And do you get that as, like, is it a magazine, or how do you read that?
Get it as a magazine. I get it as a digital copy as well. So, and you can also get iPad copy. I think it's for a few extra dollars that you can get that on. But for me, I'm a bit of an oldie worldie. I do have a Kindle now. I got a Kindle for Christmas, but I still am a big fan of paper and being able to thumb through it and dog ear things and write things in it as well. So for me, the paper version is great because you can read it whilst you're travelling on public transport or just when you need 10 minutes, whichever your favourite room is, to go and read.
Well, the other thing too is when you drop your iPad on yourself when you fall asleep reading, it doesn't hurt as much when if you've just got a magazine. So it teaches you very quickly.
That's true.
What is it, an expensive thing to subscribe to?
No. Now, the reason why I say no is somebody might look at the price and say, yes, that's expensive, but it's not a cost for me. This is an investment. Mm-hmm. So this is constant training. So I think it's not a couple of hundred dollars. I think it's just over about, it might be sort of like touching the couple of hundred dollars, but you get 13 issues for it. I sound like I'm selling for Harvard Business Review.
I've just had a look here online, and basically the all access, which gives you access to the digital and everything else, is basically only 180, you know, Australian dollars. So it is relatively cheap.
Yeah, I mean, it's investment. I mean, no, you shouldn't be making the decision lightly, but I know of hundreds of people who have spent thousands of pounds on marketing products that have just sat on the shelf and gathered dust. So for $180, for me, this is an investment, because not only can you read it, you can pass it on to other people to read it. And if you have it on your coffee table in your office as well, when your customers turn up, you also provide an image that you're more than just an IT company.
Okay, and you obviously say that the quality of the articles, but also their relevance to the market.
Yeah, hugely, hugely. Now, the thing is, because it's non-IT specific, it's a business focus. It means that it gets your brain thinking more about the business rather than more of the tactical stuff. So you work on the business rather than in the business. And you can take those ideas, you can take them to your colleagues as well and your staff that you work with, and then open that up for further discussion to get to see how, those ideas can then be implemented into the business.
Interesting. All right. So, since you've set the precedent of recommending a traditional media outlet, my choice for a magazine is Fortune. I've read the Fortune magazine for, well, 20 odd years now, ever since basically I started working. I think that what drew me to it was the fact that I think the articles are well written, they're entertaining, it has a bit of finance, a bit of Wall Street stuff, which I was always interested in. But some of the stories that they deal with, I find obviously coming out of the States is leading edge stuff. So again, 6 to 12 months, you read it in Fortune, then basically it will turn up obviously out here in Australia. So one of the reasons I've read it and always enjoyed it is I found that it has been a trend setting magazine. It does tend to be a bit US focused, and that's part of it, but our general economy and our general technology is at the moment, I suppose, led by the US. So for example, the current issue we're looking at, it talks about what Google's doing. It talks to Larry Page. It talks about the rise of the machine, how things like supercomputers and surgical robots and drones and those sort of things are becoming more and more part of the common landscape. So I would again recommend that to people. Again, if you get on a long subscription, it's something that can be fairly cheap. I think it obviously comes in, the paper version, which I enjoy, much easier to pick up and read, but it does have the iPad and the digital versions. And I think it would be fair to say that you could probably just nip down to the local news agent and pick up, one copy of this, obviously fairly expensive, but it would give you at least an idea of what the content is for obviously the Harvard Business Review and maybe also Fortune magazine.
That's great. I like that recommendation.
I think that again, it's I've read a lot of IT mag, the general PC mags and all these sort of other things that come out. But like you recommend with the Harvard Business Review, I mean, at the end of the day, it is a business, and you need to step away from it. And a magazine like that gives you a much broader picture, gives you some interesting. I've picked up a lot of interesting ideas, and this business does it this way, or maybe food production they've implemented this, and you think, oh, hang on, how if that's sort of a similar process to what I've seen, and again, importantly, it gives you these sort of trends that this is the way that things are looking, this is the way the US is looking, and I mean they talk about China and other places as well, but I think that if we could summarize for me anyway, part of the books that I like, the books that really I get the most out of, the ones that challenge my thinking, that really. Hang on, is that really the case? So, another good example, one of the other books that I really like is a book called Freakonomics. So, it says, well, hang on, just because you think that this causes this, doesn't mean that it actually does. Let's sit down and do the data and actually work it out. And, for example, one of the controversial conclusions they came to was that when crime started to drop in the US in the late 80s, that it was because of better policing and tougher laws and all that. And the economist who wrote the Freakonomics book basically said, you know what? If you look at the numbers, it's because the US legalized abortion about 20 years before that. So that means that the people, the children that have been born potentially disadvantaged weren't born. So therefore, in 20 years' time, when they're prime for committing crimes, they're just not around. So there's lots of examples in that book about that sort of thing, and it's something that really challenges your thinking. You think, and I think that's what you can take back into your business and saying, I've been assuming this, this, and this, this, and this, and is that really the case? I really need to sit down and have a look at some hard numbers.
Yeah. Yep.
So, in general, is there anything else that you could want to sum up or let people know or, recommend that they, get into reading? I mean, is it something that you set aside a regular time, or is it just a casual thing that you'll grab some reading time when you've got some downtime, or do you actually set aside a block of time to actually do reading?
I've been really poor, actually. I used to set aside time. I think I've been pretty distracted of late, just with sort of like managing the business, which, slap wrists. I shouldn't really be doing that, but that's reality. But I think that's why Harvard Business Review and those magazine subscriptions pay a lot. I mean, it doesn't also put amiss that the amount of blogs that I read and conversations that I have as well. So I think whether it's books, whatever your resources are, as long as you're learning. As long as you feel like you're growing still, whatever your age, I think that's the bit that is the secret behind why most people read. I think the danger is, like I said right at the beginning of this podcast, was that if you spend all your time reading and then don't learn, you just have the equivalent of a tree on your shelf, and you're a little bit poorer for it. So I think whatever you read, however you digest it, it's how it translates into business value and how it assists your customers, how it helps your staff, how it connects you better with colleagues and peers and people in the community, but also what it means for you personally as well. So, there are a number of non-fiction now. I actually read a lot of fiction at the moment just to park my brain. The problem with me is that when I read, I get excited. And I have to take chapter by chapter because I then want to go and do something with those ideas. So actually for me, the downtime now is actually focusing on fictional books. So, but that's not what the podcast was about, so.
Oh well, let's okay. So, what's your favorite figure? What's something you could, since we're stepping away from the business, obviously we've got to have a bit of relaxation and a bit of something to enjoy. What would you recommend that people read on the fiction side?
Oh, I don't know. Well, that depends because it's all subjective. I used to start reading autobiographies, but secretly I was still seeing them as business learning books. So for me, what I really like is the Philippa Gregory series, which is all about the Tudors. So I really like the idea of the way that this woman who is highly educated as an author, I think she's a professor actually in history. But she's just a wordsmith. She just writes wonderfully and she captures the spirit of the stories and she focuses on females in a male world, which, I tend to see that mirrors for me in an IT industry as well. But I think for me, what I like to see is how our country is put together and what it looked like in days of old. I live in a village that was very much affected by the Tudors as well. So for me, that's subjective. Not everybody's going to like looking at history. I know there are lots of women in our country over here that are more fascinated with a new range, a genre of books that are out at the moment. But yeah, I think for me, it's stuff like that and comedy, just comedy books as well. So comedians who write autobiographies and stuff like that. So just something lighthearted, just to take your head away from just, staring at your own belly button.
Well, I've got a couple that I, again, I'll keep on the technology side of things because I do enjoy those. And again, the author that I would recommend to most people who are into technology is an author called Daniel Suarez. He's written the two books that I've read are Damien, so that's Daemon, and also Freedom TM. Basically, what it those books are, one's the follows on from the second one. It talks about, someone creating an omnipresent computer program, and it talks about augmented reality, and it talks about robotics, and it's a bit of a, perhaps a science fiction-y thing, but it's not too removed from our current situation. So that's a great book. He's now written a third book, again, which is got on my list to read. The other one that I would recommend for technology-based people are books by Mark Rusinovich. So, for those of you who don't know, Mark Rusinovich is the creator of SysInternals, who now works as a fellow for Microsoft. His two books, one of them is called Zero Day, and the other one is called Trojan Horse. Again, great. You'll get a great deal out of these books by being a technology person, understanding some of the terminology and some of the references. So I think they're both really good books, and you can, like I said, you can still escape reality to an extent reading those. But again, most people who are in technology are in it because they do love it and, you know, basically live it more or less every day. So those four books I definitely recommend to people who are basically reading, looking to read fiction to get away from the other numerous copies that we've recommended there. So I would say that we've certainly given everybody who's listened, hopefully, enough reading to keep them busy maybe for or maybe another 12 months perhaps. What do you reckon?
At least.
So obviously we're drawing to our conclusion here, and I again take the opportunity to thank Suzanne for her time. Obviously it's a new year and we've all got our New Year's resolutions. Is there something that you'd like to, obviously you can let people know your details, how they can get in contact with you or how they can use your services if they want to do that?
Yeah, well, I mean, the easiest way to sort of like find me and legally stalk me is just to type in Suzanne Dancy and it should pop up. I am at the moment the only Suzanne Dancy in the world. So find me that way and connect if they want to.
Excellent. Well, what I'll do is I will make all those titles available to anybody who contacts me after the podcast. I can give you links to those and all the authors so that if you do want to create a reading list to do that. Do you, Suzanne, use any sort of library software or website to keep track of the books that you do read and you want to read and you know, your wish list sort of thing?
Do I? I did. I don't think I do anymore. But if anyone wants to see what else I'm reading, they can give me a nudge.
So for my on my side, basically, I'm a big Amazon fan. Got a lot of number of wish lists there. But the site that I use is called Goodreads.com. So again, you can link up with me via my email address. There you can see the list of books that I do like to, that I have read, do plan to read, categorized. I generally find that the way I operate is that at some point I decide that I need to get some books to read, and rather than randomly selecting something, I like to go through a list, and if I do find a book in a magazine or something I do want to read, I pop it on the list, and because it's obviously on a website, I can get to it on any device that I've got. So I do recommend the Goodreads.com website to anybody who does want to maintain a website, maintain a reading list. And, you know, I put things, the reviews and those sort of things up as there as well, and you can join with other friends and see what they're reading and keep up to date. So part of it, I think, also, too, is that, you know, linking up with people in the community and finding out what books they resonate for them and basically working your way through some of those, because you know, if they resonate with somebody else, there's a good chance they'll resonate with you. All right, so I think that brings us to the end of our time. Suzanne, thank you very much again for coming on the show, letting us know all that information. Hopefully, I'm pretty sure that everybody will have got some information and some benefit to that.
Thank you for having me.
No problems at all. Well, I'll sign off from this episode of the Need to Know podcast. I'll see you all on the next episode. This podcast has been brought to you by the CIA Ops Publications. For more information, visit www.ciaops.com/publications. To provide feedback on this podcast, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.